Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
Thank you so much for staying tuned. If you've just tuned in, my name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. As always, you can learn more about my organization or sign up for our free Lunchtime Liberty Update by visiting us on the web at www.cfif.org. If you happen to miss one of the interviews or you just want to listen to one over again, you can do so by visiting that website and click on, it's actually my picture, unfortunately, click on that picture and it'll take you right to the audio version or the podcasts of many of the interviews that we conduct right here on 1330 WEBY. Well, folks who've been tuning in for the entire program know that at the beginning of the top half of the first hour of the program, we spoke with a gentleman from the Heritage Foundation about the issue of civil justice reform. And while we were on the phone, he kept referring back to Mississippi and how Mississippi had done things right and Mississippi's economy has thrived. I mean, that's the issue we're all talking about right now as Congress considers a stimulus package, as we look for ways to save our economy here in the United States, is what are some of the things that we can do? What are some of the things that have been done that have helped to jumpstart an economy? And Mississippi offers us a beautiful lesson. And here to help us understand what went right and is still going right in Mississippi is Senator Charlie Ross from Mississippi. Senator Charlie Ross was first elected to the Mississippi Senate in 1997 after serving as representative from District 59 in the Mississippi House. In 2004, he was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, where he drafted the Comprehensive Tort Reform Bill, and he was a leader in the Senate in the successful fight to pass that bill. For his leadership, he was given a wonderful award by ALEC, which is the American Legislative Exchange Council. They recognized him in 2007 and named him the Legislator of the Year. He's a certifiably smart person, having graduated from Harvard Law School, and he now runs a law firm there in Mississippi. Senator Ross, thanks so much for joining us.
Renee, how are you doing? It's good to be with you.
Doing great. It's great to have you on the program. Were your ears burning about an hour ago?
No, I just heard you said I was certifiable. I'm not sure what that means.
No. About an hour ago, we were talking about jump-starting the economy and some things that can be done, and we raised the issue of civil justice reform, something a lot of folks think of as not necessarily tied in at all to the economy, but, you know, some of the naysayers will say, oh, my gosh, when you talk about civil justice reform, what you're doing is taking away the rights of citizens to sue. And it could be anything further than the truth, I think. And here to tell us about that is Charlie Ross and how you won the tort war in Mississippi and how this can be the key for success in other states. Namely, let's go right here to Florida, where we do need to kickstart our economy. Tell us about the lessons learned in Mississippi.
Well, the first lesson learned is that people of good faith, when the cause is right, can overcome the obstacles, and we were facing huge obstacles. The trial bar, the plaintiff's trial bar in Mississippi, was extremely well funded. They had made a ton of money, literally billions, in the asbestos and tobacco litigation. But the business community came together, the medical community came together, Republicans in the legislature came together with conservative Democrats who understood that it was important. And it really was an economic development and a health care issue. I mean, you couldn't, if you lived in rural Mississippi, babies weren't being delivered. Toyota turned us down and specifically cited our legal environment as a reason. I remember one day in a committee hearing, 9 out of 10 OBGYN doctors had been sued in the state of Mississippi, and down around Natchez, the doctors were going to move across the river to Louisiana just simply because across the river the legal system was considered better. And something had to be done, and fortunately, starting in 2002, but then finishing the job in 2004, we passed a bill, and this just made a dramatic difference.
Now, help us quantify, if you can, I mean, what kind of things did you, in fact, put in place that made the difference? I mean, what types of legislative measures were put in place, and how did you then, in fact, measure that it was a success?
Well, you know, the measurement, let me talk about some of the measurements and then I'll, measures of success, and then I'll talk about some of the specifics of the bill. Before we passed comprehensive tort reform, medical malpractice insurance was going up 25% per year. After we passed it, About 2 years after we had passed it, medical malpractice premiums had declined approximately 40%. Before we passed it, Toyota chose Texas over Mississippi and said one of the reasons was our legal environment. After we passed it, Toyota came to Mississippi. They didn't necessarily choose Mississippi because of our legal environment, but our legal environment wasn't an obstacle. A bad legal environment did not preclude them from even looking at us. I know one, and it affects small business too. I know a Mississippi business here that, a couple hundred employees, and their legal bills were $70,000 a month. After we passed it, they went to zero because they were getting drawn into court on lots of frivolous lawsuits. And the objective was not to keep anybody who has a legitimate claim from going to court. I'm a practicing lawyer myself, and that's what the courts are for. The objective was to provide predictability and a level playing field, and fortunately we did it. Now, what did we do? One, pain and suffering. I mean, Renee, if you've got a backache and I've got a backache, how do you value that? Well, yeah, the juries are required to value it, and in some jurisdictions it could be $2 or $3 million, and in some jurisdictions it could be $200,000 or $300,000. And we said in the medical area, maximum of $500,000, and then the general business, a maximum of $1 million. You still get your lost wages and your medical bills, but for that totally subjective thing called pain and suffering, or loss of enjoyment of life, we said we're going to put a cap on it so there'll be some predictability so that when a defendant goes into court, they know the worst-case scenario. And another measure we did that just common sense. We said if you cause 10% of the damages, you pay for 10% of them, but you don't have to pay for the other 90% caused by somebody else. That was the way it was before. It was sort of like Obama's share of the wealth, and we said no. Individual accountability is important. If you cause 90%, you pay 90%, but if you only cause 10%, you only pay 10%. And that just makes a tremendous difference.
Well, it's interesting that you raise that issue, because personal responsibility, accountability, I mean, anyone who listened to President Obama give his inaugural speech, you heard those terms used. Yet, do you think we're going to see them applied legislatively in terms of, putting into place federal statutes or encouraging regulatory measures that will, in fact, as you say, provide a little more predictability? I mean, what does your crystal ball say on all of that?
Well, I know here in Mississippi, the tort reform legislation we passed has just made a tremendous difference. And like I said, I do not think it's denied compensation or access to somebody who has a legitimate claim. I personally am worried at the national level. I personally am worried about the people that support President Obama. He is our president, and when somebody gets elected, you put Republican, Democratic partisanship aside. But I listened to his speech, and parts of it troubled me because he used the phraseology of individual responsibility, and he's a great speaker. But if you listened in between the lines, he also said things like, before you can realize your potential as an individual, you have to have a certain level of subsistence or help. And frankly, in my judgment, if somebody is disabled and is unable to take care of themselves, we're a compassionate country. But if somebody is able to work, we don't need to be bailing them out. And I have a lot of problems with the auto bailouts, and that happened under Bush, and looks like it's going to happen more under Obama. That is going the opposite direction of individual responsibility.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of folks, you've mentioned this issue, I've mentioned it, they think, oh, they're going to take away our right to be able to sue. But I think really what it does is it decreases the number of frivolous suits so that those which are not frivolous, those that are worthy of making it through the judicial system, don't get slow down, don't get clogged up. I mean, I read about a lawsuit today. There's a gentleman. I mean, this is how ridiculous it gets. And, I mean, people can go to my organization's website at cfif.org and look at our jesters where we post these legally insane lawsuits. But there's a gentleman, if you can believe this, Senator, I think he's in New Hampshire, and he is suing a golf course because he was hit in the eye with a golf ball, and he is partially blind now. Now, that's nothing to laugh about. There's nothing frivolous about that. But guess who hit the golf ball?
Surprised me.
He did.
Oh, really?
He hit the golf ball, and it ricocheted off a sign that was on the golf course. I guess he must have a terrible shot. But anyway, you know, he has no one else to. He's not going to sue himself, although I'm sure people have tried that. So who does he have left to sue? I mean, someone's got to be sued. I mean, clearly, you know, someone. That's everyone's mentality these days. And it's unfortunate because I think, you know, we wonder why our economy is suffering. And do you think it's fair to say that some of the suffering is due to the being over litigious?
Well, it certainly was fair to say about Mississippi. Before we passed the tort reform, we were known as the center of jackpot justice. Several jurisdictions in Mississippi had been labeled as judicial hellholes. We had one county in Mississippi where there were more lawsuits pending than there were people who lived in the county.
No way.
There was one county in Mississippi where the drugstore owner down there had been sued just thousands of times, or at least hundreds of times, because she sold FDA-approved drugs that had been prescribed by a physician. And the only reason she was sued is because they wanted to get somebody in Jefferson County. That's an abuse of the legal system. It was wrong. It causes people not to respect the judicial system and attorneys. You know, attorneys are supposed to be officers of the court. They're not supposed to just be about their pocketbook. They have a responsibility that goes beyond their self-interest. And frankly, I think we lost our way here in Mississippi in that regard. It was extortion in many cases. You'd have 10 mass torts with 10,000 plaintiffs or 5,000 plaintiffs against two or three defendants in a small state court with a state judge, and Dickie Scruggs. Everybody's heard of him. Dickie Scruggs himself said, those are magic jurisdictions. And my interpretation of what he was saying is, it doesn't matter what the facts are or the law, if the plaintiff is going to get money. And people were running away from Mississippi as a result, as far as business people who would bring jobs to Mississippi.
Now, you mentioned Dickie Scruggs, and you mentioned Mississippi being in the news as one of the judicial hell holes. Mississippi's been in the news. Dickie Scruggs has been in the news of late. A lot of the trial bar in Mississippi has been in news of late. Tell us about what's going on there.
Well, frankly, it's very embarrassing. But in my judgment, it's a cancer that's got to be cut out. Mr. Scruggs has fled, he and his son both, and two or three others, have pled guilty to overtly trying to bribe a judge for a ruling and a dispute over legal fees. Now, isn't that the height of the irony? Mr. Scruggs was getting millions of dollars, but because one of his co-counsel and he disagree on how to split that, Mr. Scruggs tried to bribe the judge. And just recently, we found out that Mr. Scruggs has pled guilty in another case involving another judge, where supposedly the bribe was Mr. Scruggs' influence with the Mississippi senator to get the senator to recommend the judge for a federal judgeship. We've had four or five lawyers plead guilty, and it's my understanding, the scuttlebutt is that the grand jury is still meeting, and we haven't seen the end of it yet.
Well, and I mean, you know, talking lawyer to lawyer, not all lawyers are bad, and I think our next caller may be another one who is not bad, although I'm getting the signal that we need to take a break before we take Terry's call. Sir, do you mind staying with us through the break?
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back. We are continuing the conversation on civil justice reform by talking with Senator Charlie Ross, who helped win the tort war in Mississippi. Joining us now is Terry. Go ahead, Terry, it's your turn.
Hey, Renee, and of course, you figure who this is, Terry Gross. And,
good to talk with you.
Senator, yeah, I'm a local personal injury lawyer in Florida, and I actually host a show like she does on EBY on Wednesdays. And we've had a lot of tort reform here in Florida as well, and I've been a lawyer for 30 years, and I've yet to see a frivolous lawsuit around here. I've seen small lawsuits, but I haven't heard all the stuff you read about and blog on the internet. And you hear these national cases where the judge sued because the dry cleaner's lost his pants, he sues for millions, and he got nothing. That's silly. I've heard these stupid cases where some mother sues McDonald's because her kid got fat because she took her kid there every day. But in the real world, if you talk to judges here locally, the only frivolous cases we know about are these inmates. They sit in jail and they file these stupid lawsuits because they don't have a colored TV in their jail cell. They don't have white sneakers. They got black sneakers and stupid stuff. But day in, day out, there's people like me, and not like Scruggs. Scruggs is a criminal. He's no different than Madoff was or anybody else. I mean, he's an absolute criminal and deserves to be put in prison. But there's a large segment of us that are just fighting for people's rights. And I heard you talk about, you know, the pain and suffering damages, and oh, you have some back pain. Well, yeah, I've tried those cases. I don't get $2 million for those cases, or even $200,000. But what about the quadriplegics that get with a cap? What about the person that is a full quadriplegic, and they're capped at $500,000? Those are the sad cases that get. They're the ones that get injured by the over-tort reform, and that's what I see. But I'm all for the loser's pay rule. I'm for the elimination of joint and several liability, which you described. I think you're right. Somebody with a lot of money shouldn't be held responsible for everything if they're only 10% at fault. I got no problem with that. But some of these laws have gone overboard.
Well, you know, I think you and I may agree more than you would think. I certainly agree with you about the prisoner lawsuits. And I also agree that the run-of-the-mill lawyer, whether he's on the defense side or the plaintiff side, is just doing his job. And most of them do a good job. But here in Mississippi, there were obvious excesses, gross excesses, I would say. And it got to be a situation, I mean, it was almost law practice by computer, managing spreadsheets rather than working cases up. And the sky was the limit in certain jurisdictions. I mean, interesting story. You talked about suing McDonald's for your kids getting fat. I tried a case a few years ago where the lawyer on the other side was the lawyer who had sued McDonald's, the hot coffee lawyer. You know, the lady had spilled coffee on herself. And those situations exist. But what we had here in Mississippi was a situation to where, I mean, literally, I mean, you could defend yourself and win, but lose because of the legal expenses. And, you know, lots of businesses were one lawsuit away from bankruptcy. And the system we put in place, as you just said, pain and suffering, we didn't say you can't get pain and suffering. We just say in the general business, auto cases, is limited to $1 million, and in the medical malpractice is limited to $500,000. And the quadriplegic you mentioned, I talked to a lady one day. She came to the Capitol, and she was in a wheelchair, and she had gotten $9 million here in Mississippi. And I sat down and talked to her, and she was worried about, you know, the next situation like that. And we went through it. And her medical bills and her lost wages and her future health care, all that amounted to $7.2 million. And I explained, you get all that, it's just the pain and suffering would be limited to $500,000. So you get 7.7 instead of 9. And, you know, that reasonable trade-off for predictability allows people like that to have neurosurgeons here in Mississippi to take care of them. Prior to tort reform, there wasn't a neurosurgeon between Jackson, Mississippi, and Memphis because they'd all pulled up stakes and left or gone out of practice.
Well, yeah, again, there are abuses on both sides, but I've seen abuses from the insurance companies on the other side, just having cases where they would delay and delay and delay, like on hurricane claims on purpose, knowing that people just couldn't hang in there and eventually would just give up and take 50 cents on a dollar because they couldn't survive litigation for 3 or 4 years.
Well, you know, I'm not any abuses by an insurance company, and I have no more. I'm not defending them. My goal in writing the bill, and I told my friends in the business community and on the and in the insurance industry, the goal is a level playing field. The goal is not defendant wins or plaintiff wins. The goal is a level playing field so that you're not afraid to go to court because you have no idea of what the exposure will be. And on the other side, you have a court that will be a fair court and give you reasonable compensation for your injuries. If you ever stray into the field of defendant wins or plaintiff wins, and that's your objective legislatively, you're defeating the purpose of courts. And I think one of the reasons we have been successful here in Mississippi is because we did take the approach that we wanted a level, predictable playing field as opposed to whose ox is gored.
Senator Charlie Ross, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. Terry, we very much appreciate you calling in and hosting the program on the days that you do. Senator, thank you again. For folks who want to learn more, I encourage you to go to legalreforminthenews.com. There's an interview up there that was conducted with the Mississippi senator. Thank you again, Senator.
Thank you, Renee. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you. We'll be right back after this short break.